Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. Andrew Han, what am I supposed to say?
You're supposed to say, well, I hope you subscribe by now, but everyone should be rating, subscribing, and reviewing Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective.
Thank you. It's Thanksgiving Eve. Hope everyone is having decent travel, etc. I traveled yesterday to Akron, Cleveland area, where my family is, but also the Lakers are playing the Cavs tonight. I will talk about that a little later. LeBron return part two or whatever. In Boston, hopefully with her family on Thanksgiving, is Jackie McMullen. Jackie, how's your week going?
It's going. Not everybody's here yet, you know. It's going. We're fine. Life is good. No complaints. I can make some up of it. I do want you to know that whether you knew this or not, you guys caused a little bit of a stir from the podcast last week. At least I got a lot of feedback on it. For you both definitively declaring that Kevin Durant is a better player than Steph Curry.
Ooh.
Do you guys even remember doing that?
Well, first off, let's introduce my man in Dallas, Ban McMahon. The rare time when he's home. Mr. McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
So this is a nuanced thing, Jackie. Do I think that Kevin Durant is a better player than Steph? Yes, I do. Do I think that Steph Curry is a transformational player, the likes of which the league has never seen before? Yes, I do. And I wrote a story to that effect a couple of weeks ago, and I hate to sound like a callback. By the way, Andrew Han, I listened back to the podcast on Monday, and our man Bontemps referenced things that he'd written like four different times, including from like 6 or 8 months ago.
Clickety clack. Yep.
Just so. But anyway, a couple of weeks ago, I wrote this story where I quoted Steve Nash and Scottie Pippen, where I talked about Steph Curry's place in history. So while I do believe that Kevin Durant is right there neck and neck with LeBron as the best player in the league, it's in no means a slight to Steph Curry. But Jackie, go ahead.
Well, that's why I'm giving you the chance to say all that, just to straighten everybody out. Boy, did I just hear about it. I was places. I don't know where I was, but I kept hearing it from fans and and then I actually had a great conversation with the great Nick Nurse before the Celtics beat him in overtime.
Guy.
He's such a delightful person. And by the way, a loyal listener to the Hoop podcast, although I was a little distraught to hear that he listens to it before he falls asleep at night. So I hope we're not what puts him to bed. But anyway, we talked about it for a second and, you know, it is all about context, of course. But I'm glad that you just said what you said because I think that's going to make everybody feel better.
I think KD is definitely a more talented player. But you know, we're doing this little 5-on-5 and it's the super early premature, I guess 20% of the way into the season awards edition. And I've got Steph as the MVP. I think Steph is the most valuable player in the league to this point this season. And certainly you see the way that the Warriors have fallen apart without him. But in terms of talent, I mean, the simple difference in size to me makes KD a more unique talent.
Right. No, this is all true. Just giving you guys some feedback.
Well, I hope you always follow it up with a thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah, of course. But here's what I would, let's try this on for size, and we don't need to talk about this for the whole podcast, but, how about that? Maybe Kevin Durant is the more talented player, but that Steph Curry is a more valuable teammate.
Oh, no question.
I would agree with that. But these are all shades of gray and nuance that don't fit hot take arguments. And I don't think it was said in hot take manner. It's not really the way we roll.
No, but you know, right? But you know how that goes. But you know how that goes. So there you go. We've set the record straight. We may now can.
Or Steph Curry's just the better player. I'm just saying.
That could also be. There's you could certainly make a case.
How many finals MVPs does Steph have, though?
I mean, those awards are arbitrary.
There's your hot take for the day. But no, when it comes to KD, I do think we should just shut the bleep up and watch the bleeping game.
Tom Haverstraw, who now works for NBC, he had a story. And I mean, this is a circumstantial framing of the story, but it's relevant, and certainly it's not something that I thought about. But you remember when Durant hurt his knee in 2016, and the and the Warriors went on a 13-game win streak because they're the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Well, he says he's done the research, and he now says that, and this is coming off a section here where the Warriors. This is a very well-positioned story in the news cycle because the Warriors, I believe, have lost four or five without Steph. Granted, Draymond is also hurt, but just setting up before the stat. The Warriors have won 21 consecutive games where Steph has played and Kevin Durant has not.
Wow.
And
interesting.
You know, it's easy to remember that they it's easy to forget, I should say, that they went 73-9 with, you know, a Steph Curry unanimous-backed MVP team, you know, 2 years ago when they lost the finals. Now, what I will say that Durant gives them is an absolutely indefensible team and the ability to have an MVP in reserve. Their margin for error for victory, especially in a playoff setting, is just preposterous with Durant and Curry. But it could be said that the way the team was constructed was more constructed around Steph as the centerpiece of the team as opposed to around Durant as the centerpiece of the team. But like I said, it is a nuanced argument. But we've talked about the Warriors a lot this week. Is there anything, McMahon, you have else to say? That Jackie can be accosted by fans for the next week?
I mean, I just want to add in that I did watch Harrison Barnes shut KD down in the fourth quarter of a Mavericks win over the Warriors, you know? That mention on Twitter got some Warriors fans all hot and bothered with me. All I said is KD missed seven of his last eight shots, and Barnes played really good defense on him. But now, the meltdown of KD mentally.
He had some good looks down the stretch that he just missed also. I will just point that out.
Klay Thompson had some really good looks that he just missed. And it's, that's really, you know, I obviously gets lost in all the drama there, but you know, Klay Thompson not really playing well has been puzzling. But, no, the Warriors are a good old fashioned mess right now. And I thought Steve Kerr's take on it was pretty.
No, they're not a mess. They're okay. They're fine.
They're fine.
I mean, they'll be fine.
And you know what?
I'll still take them against the field, but they, as of right now, this minute, they are an absolute mess.
But I think I don't think I would call Klay Thompson's struggles puzzling because he benefits more than anyone from having Steph Curry on the floor. More than anybody. More than KD, more than anybody.
Klay Thompson is in such a perfect spot. Such a perfect spot. You know, he doesn't have an ego where he needs adulation. I mean, I'm sure he'd like to have more, but he's in one of the most dream spots in the league. I do want to talk about Markelle Fultz. Jackie, have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
Injury, and, not injury.
And I'm going to just tread so lightly here. I don't think he needs to see a shoulder specialist. And I've said this before. I think there's something else going on that has to do with his mental health. And I don't think that's a horrible thing to say. This is an odd story. It felt a little bit like Kawhi Leonard to me, like for just a mini second there, doesn't it? A little bit.
Minus the
agents
actual
getting
production.
Involved. Well, of course, but I'm talking about the idea that there's an injury that the team and the player allegedly, or allegedly because Brett Brown was obviously taken aback by this, right?
Well, and so Brett Brown, Elton Brand, I mean, they didn't see it coming, and Fultz apparently re-injured his shoulder when he fell down the depth chart, as best I could tell.
Yeah. It was a sudden fast drop to out of the rotation.
Yeah.
That's a funny line, but I mean, what Jackie is saying is, you know, Jackie, I go back to Chuck Knobloch, Steve Sachs sort of stuff. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. Is there another example?
We're saying the same.
You see it in the NFL kickers. It's absolutely the yips. And you saw just a really painful, grinding hitch in his free throws. And then I was actually there in Philly when Utah came through, and his solution was patting the ball back and forth from hand to hand on the way up to shoot his free throws. Just because, I mean, he is at a point where he does not want, even on free throws, to have the ball in his hands in any kind of normal shooting motion. And obviously, you know, and I don't even know if, you know, putting a shoulder, injury out there, I don't think that's doing him any favors. I don't think there's anybody in the world who believes that. But it's interesting because sometimes you'll see him and, you know, he'll like, you know, shoot these pull-up jumpers where he looks really smooth. But it's like the longer he has the ball in his hands, the more time he has to think, the worse it looks.
Yeah, he said that one of the foul lines slipped. Yeah. That's such a strange. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. What's he going to say? It was terrible.
I just feel for this kid. But I did think for the Sixers, somewhat alarming that Raymond Brothers is now referring to himself as his attorney.
Yeah, that was odd as well.
So did that suggest to me that, you know, maybe there is some legal recourse here? Is he, you know, going to leave the team and they're going to tell him you can't leave the team? Is this going to end up as a union battle? And then, you know, he said, his agent said, or his attorney, you know, he's not going to practice. He's not going to play till he sees a specialist. And then he practiced. He shut out yesterday, right? He was at practice.
Well, I will say this. I don't think it's interesting that you bring that up, Jackie. Raymond Brothers is an attorney.
Well, of course he is. But whoever calls him an attorney.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. I just want to be clear.
No, I mean, I think there's something going on there, though. I really do. I think.
I know. I just, without giving away his email address is something along the lines of, you know, attorney, NBA attorney guy.
Right, but R.E. Begley and David Aldridge and several others referred to him as his attorney, not his agent, and that's right. A departure.
That's right.
That's all I'm
saying.
So
I have one comment and then a question. So I have not been around the Sixers this year at all, but the people who I have talked to who have been around them have told me the one thing that you take away from talking to the Sixers, whether it's management, coaching staff, or the players, is their unwavering support for Markelle Fultz.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
not always the case in other difficult scenarios where, you know,
right.
you see a little bit of a variance. From what I understand, and you know, my belief is that they genuinely like the guy, like they really want him to be successful.
A lot. And you know, Brian, the last time I was with the Sixers, and it was a while ago now, but when I was talking to Joel, we talked about Markelle a lot, and we were just talking. I wasn't interviewing him, and he's like, "Don't worry, I got his back," and. And he's not the only one, you know. McConnell is cutting into his time. Those guys are friends. There's no animosity here. This is why it feels a little bit to me like Kawhi Leonard. Like, I don't recall ever hearing about animosity between Kawhi and his teammates until much later when Tony Parker chimed in with the fact that he had the same injury. But up till that point, I mean, by then we were months into it. Initially, everybody supported Kawhi as well, no? I mean, that brings me to
my question.
Split there either.
And I just want to be clear. I don't have any basis for saying this. I have the question. Does Markelle Fultz play for the Sixers again?
I mean,
how does he not?
I would. Where if he doesn't play for them, who does he play for?
Right,
that's like probably a better question.
Well, I'm just saying that, like,
what's
the Sixers
right now?
Because the Sixers are. well known for their conservative nature when it comes to injuries.
Injury.
I don't know. It's not my shoulder. Okay. So this is one of the lessons I've learned over the years covering the NBA. You gotta be very careful, but it's not my shoulder. So I can't say he's okay. I don't know, but the Sixers clearly have got this. This guy is cleared to play, and he was cleared to play last year when he went away for his injury. And they expressed surprise that he was being deemed as potentially having a shoulder injury now, which leads me to believe that there's a completely different page that Markel and his attorney agent are on and the Sixers organization. And also, they seem to have made the decision, although it's far from a permanent decision, but Brett Brown kind of crossed the Rubicon the other night when he didn't play him in the second half of a game against the Suns. He played TJ McConnell ahead of him. And after the game, when he was asked, does this mean Markel is not in the rotation anymore? And Brett Brown basically said, I can't promise anything. And so what basically looked like to me is, you know, they sort of kind of came to a decision here, whether it was, you know, a definitive decision or whether it was just de facto, that they have to move away from worrying about Markel and they've got to worry about winning games because of where they are in the season now and what's happening now that they've traded for Jimmy Butler, which is a perfectly fine decision if you ask me. But if they're on a different page about his actual health, be it physical or mental, and they're on and clearly Fultz might see being harmed by not playing and being out of the lineup, out of the rotation, and all of a sudden that happens once, and all of a sudden he's gone from the team. I think I don't know if it's serious, but I think it's a question that could be asked is if he plays again. And maybe I'm off base. Maybe it's not a good question, but I found myself asking it.
Well, I think it is a fair question, and it's not, you know, I would say this. I don't think anybody is questioning how the Sixers have handled this. I haven't heard anybody question it. To your point, the players have been public supportive. Brett Brown has, you know, bent over backwards, put him in the starting lineup, when we all knew that wasn't a very good idea for the team as a whole, but was good for this one young player to try to get him back into the thick of things. So whatever happens with Markel Fultz, we're all going to be looking at him, not the Sixers. Well, maybe I should speak for myself. At least that's how I see it. I don't think the Sixers have erred here.
I do question how the Sixers have handled it. And the reason I say that is because I think that they were so worried about pumping up his confidence that they put themselves in a bad spot. He didn't belong in the starting lineup. They've traded a couple guys now, but they took apart what was plus minus wise the best starting lineup in the NBA just to try to pump his confidence up. And then by the end of the preseason, it was so clear that that was a poor fit that they went to the awkward, well, he's a starter, but not in the second half type of thing. And then they made the trade. It's like, well, oh, man, we really can't start him now. And now he falls out of the rotation. I think they put themselves in a really bad spot by putting him in the starting lineup in the first place.
Okay, but that's all fine. But how is that detrimental to Markel Fultz? They gave him every opportunity. See what I'm saying
here?
Yeah,
because
I'm not talking about whether they should have done for their team. Well, you don't play him, or what do you do?
No, I think they put themselves in a spot where they were going to have to demote him. And, hindsight's 20/20, and so it's easy for me to, lay on my couch and say this, but I think they should have pumped him up as a super sub, this guy can be one of the really special six men in the league this year type of things. Just because, I mean, it wasn't a mystery. You knew putting two non-shooters in a starting backcourt together was a recipe for yuck. And so, I just feel like putting themselves in a position where they had to, what would be perceived as demoting him, I think that was detrimental to him.
I just, we're starting to pick up quite a bit of NBA guys in exile, right? Because we've got Carmelo.
Crazy.
We got JR. Smith, who went to XL yesterday. And by the way, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about J.R. Smith on this podcast, but J.R. Smith could not play, might not play again this year because his contract is designed in such a way that it makes it, in my mind, very unlikely for the Cavs to buy him out. Now, you never say never.
Right.
But I think the better, you know, it's a better chance J.R. Smith will get traded and play elsewhere or reconcile in some way and come back and play for the Cavs in a couple of months or a couple of weeks, probably months, than it is he gets bought out. And I won't go into all the details unless you really want me to. But
no, I read your story and it was a good one. But I just – do you think – the problem is, like, if you're a team, what possible motive do you have to take on J.R. Smith? Let's be really brutally honest.
Well, I mean, not when he's shooting 32% from three-point range like he has been this year, but, you know,
he's been a malcontent. He's been a malcontent, though, Brian. He's a guy that's a wild card that always had LeBron, or so the narrative goes, which may or be true or untrue, always had LeBron there to kind of rein him in when he needed to. So I just don't know what the market is for a guy like J.R. Smith. Now, I will say this. It's clear to me that the Cleveland Cavaliers were not very honest with their veterans, and I'm going to guess that includes Kevin Love, who's been away from the team while he's rehabbing his... Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. But, you know, so to me, it just seems like there's something there that there's a disconnect there. Promises were made or assurances, perhaps, that haven't come to pass. You can probably tell me better, Brian.
Well, here's what I would say. I think that the veteran players believe they were misled, which maybe at the end of the day is all that matters. I don't think that they were actually misled because, you know, you have to understand the ego of Dan Gilbert. And unless you worked for him or played for him, you may not understand that ego. Dan genuinely, I honestly believe, thought that this was going to be a chance to make a playoff. And I think he would never say this, and I am not saying that I know this to be true. This is my feel on the matter. But my feel is that Dan would have loved to have made the playoffs with this team and LeBron and the Lakers to have missed the playoffs. And that would have been a tremendous way for him to sort of get some measure of revenge. And if you know Dan Gilbert and the way he operates, this is how he thinks. I can't say for sure that's how he thought. So when they decided to switch gears, which was messy, that's a genuine mess because they had to fire the coach because the coach refused to do it, essentially. The coach was basically challenging the general manager, and he was saying, I'm going to play who I want, and the coach got fired because of it.
And he's getting now paid. The veterans, for him. He's better off.
For sure. And that's the way he feels. But I honestly think that they thought Colin Sexton was going to be like a really good positive impact. And what we've seen from Colin Sexton is he has moments, but he is your prototypical 19-year-old rookie point guard. He makes a lot of mistakes, and there are times when he has no clue what he's doing out there, and there are occasional times when he looks really good. But it's not a way to build a playoff team is to have that guy, you know, play 35 minutes, which is why Ty Lue was not playing in 35 minutes. But I honestly believe that they were looking to win, and they just completely misjudged their team, and then Love got hurt. And I will say this, no matter what anybody wants to say, if you're going to tank, it's better to decide to tank in the second week of the season than it is in the 20th week of the season. And looking at these kids from Duke, and also the fact that that the Cavs draft pick is top 10 protected, the absolute correct decision is to tank. And George Hill and J.R. Smith and Kevin Love have a choice to make. They are all making a ton of money. Their choice is to be professionals or to not and wait for things to change. And J.R. elected to speak out and make his feelings known, and now he is no longer with the team. Now we'll see what happens with Love and George Hill and Channing Frye and Kyle Korver. But that's sort of where it is now. I don't know if there needs to be a whole lot more said.
It sort of sounds like they failed to factor in Gilbert's id more than his ego, Brian. But what were you saying about exiles and pariahs? I want to get back to that.
Well, so count these with me. We've got, I mean, do we put Fultz in exile right now? I don't know. He's not a pariah, yeah. But is he in exile?
According to his attorney slash agent, he wants to be.
Self-imposed?
Yes.
Carmelo is in exile. JR is in exile. We've got Jabari Bird in Boston. I don't know, Jackie, what you would term that. He's dealing with legal issue and in exile?
Yeah, he's in exile. He might be in permanent exile. He's looking at some very serious charges.
Jody Meeks, in the middle of a long suspension and in exile. I don't know if he'll play again after what's happened with him. So, am I forgetting anybody? Or is there more? Check back next week.
Some of them have been settled. The Joakim Noah one got settled. Lou Alding's long. Weird.
Yeah, but where's Joakim Noah playing? I must have missed it.
Yeah.
Where's he playing though?
Mark Stein reported he was close to signing with the Grizzlies, but that has not happened.
No, it hasn't happened. Is my point. So I think we have to still officially call him in exile, right?
Like Lou Alding was in the worst.
But he's in exile, not on a roster.
Still there. Yeah. Right. That's right.
Yeah, but so that's the same thing as, Carmelo. Carmelo is in XL, not on a roster, right?
No, he's on a roster. He is listed as not with
the team. So they still haven't waived him?
No, they have agreed.
They have
announced that they will be parting ways, but they have not officially waived him yet.
Oh, they still haven't done it. Okay, that's my bad.
He has played his last game with the Rockets, but he's still technically on the roster.
What about Swaggy P? Is he in exile? Swaggy P? Where's Swaggy P?
No, he's just out of a job. He's out of a job.
All right, so that to me is exile if I'm Swaggy P, man.
I'm sure it feels like it.
Right?
So, McMahon, before I talk about this Cavs-Laker game, we've talked a lot about the sophomore slumps in Boston, or I guess maybe Jaylen Brown's a junior now. By the way, Jackie, our real plus minus, we talked about the Celtics on Monday, so I don't really want to go ad nauseum here, even though I've got the preeminent Celtics expert. But the real plus minus, which is a complicated metric, but something that I think is interesting. That Andrew, how would you best describe what real plus minus is?
Real plus minus is a metric that gets better over time. It takes into account everyone that you play with and adjusts for that.
Right.
So theoretically, it is a more accurate indicator of a player's individual opponents adjusted for pace of play, adjusted for team, strength of schedule, opponent, teammates that are with them on the floor.
So can I just tell you in real plus minus, because they've just come out for this year.
Yes.
So it takes a little while. You need to play a few games.
Did
you see where my boy was? Did you see where my boy was? Pascal Siakam, number 19.
So, I'm going to say.
How about Marc Gasol?
Where was
number
he?
One.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah, Marc Gasol. And by the way, that's where the Grizzlies are in the Western Conference.
I want to say again, because we've got a holiday weekend coming up. Jackie did this piece on Pascal Siakam and his roots in Cameroon. Just Google Jackie McMullen and Pascal Siakam and find the story. If you want to,
we're going to repost it.
Jackie, it came out in the summer, right? It was kind of like, didn't.
When it came out, Brian, this is when it came out. When I was lying on my back, unable to sit up with three herniated discs, and the Raptors were down 3-1 in the playoffs.
I missed it.
And they decided to run it. Well, of course you did, because they decided to run it game 5. Of a Toronto Raptors series that they were going to lose, which they promptly did. I think it was on the site maybe a total of 5 hours, if that.
Well,
but
it's
they're
on
reposting
the site
it for All Access Day. They're gonna repost it.
Okay, so that's
for All Access
December
Day with the Raptors, December 5th.
We,
I think
Isn't we have an All Access Day coming up with the Raptors on yes.
So they're
going to
repost it. I got to write a new top. Anyway, continue. But he's just
you
my
can
guy.
Find
my guy.
You can find it now if you want. It's out there.
Yeah,
anyway, my point was Jaylen Brown's real plus minus. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
It's like 417. 417.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. But, all right. What I wanted to get to was McMahon. Speaking of sophomore slumps, your guy Spider Mitchell.
Yeah.
Now, Spider Mitchell had a game this last week. They just came off a four-game Eastern Conference trip. It was a real up-and-down trip for them. They won in Boston. They lost. They had another,
well, it wasn't all East because it started. They won in Memphis. They lost by
great
50.
Win.
50 right. In Dallas, and I had to right. watch that debacle. They lost a good game in Philly that I was also attended, and that was when he had the rare 35-shot zero.
Well, that's what I'm going to get to.
And then they beat Boston and get spanked by the Pacers. So a long, strange trip for the Jazz, and it's been a strange season. And, you know, and a lot of it is Donovan Mitchell has been so
– Did you see how many shots Donovan Mitchell took in Indiana the other night?
Yeah, not very many at all.
He took 8.
And so that's and it was very interesting because – so a 35-shot – zero assist performance.
That's not Kobe Bryant land right there. Well,
never did it.
Kobe
never did
two
it.
Assist. Is that
never
right?
Never did it. Never did it. Allen Iverson, who was sitting courtside that night, never did it. The only active player who had ever done it, the only other active guy who had ever
Hold
done
on. It. Don't say. Let's guess.
Okay.
Who would have
and
done
by the way,
other
thanks
guy?
For reading. Thanks for reading because this was mentioned prominently in my story that night, but go on.
I apologize. I saw the quotes that he had in your story.
Yeah, and I have to disqualify
read his
myself
words, not
because
mine.
That's right. I have to disqualify myself because I did read the story.
Thank you, Jackie.
So that,
okay, Wendy, you illiterate.
I'm trying to think. There's not that many guys who
well, and the only
could even take
active,
shots.
The only active player with an asterisk on active, I guess
Kyrie?
You could say.
Was it Kyrie?
No. Nope.
No, it wasn't, but good guess. That's a fair guess.
I just gave you a great hint. Active with an asterisk on active.
Oh, Melo.
And that was Melo's 62.
There you go. Bing, 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 bing.
That was Melo's 62-point performance. The last guy before Melo to go 35-plus shots, no assists, was Antoine Walker in 1998.
I can see that. You know, Jackie, the
last old kid.
Jackie, do you remember World Be Free?
Of course I do. Philadelphia. Okay. World Be Free!
Well, I would say Cleveland.
Say.
I would say Cleveland. But
he
my dad used to say World Be Free used to get 3 shots up from the scorer's table when he was about to check in.
Well, first of all, he's the best nickname in history. I mean, really, come on, that's one of the greatest.
Well, he changed his name.
Yeah, he changed
he was
his
Lloyd
name.
Free.
Yeah.
So,
but World B.
Yeah. So, Terry Pluto, who was one of my inspirations, he covered the Cavs in the '80s. He told me this great World B Free story about getting shots up. And, he said that one time after a game, that World said to him, he goes, you know, Terry, it's really hard to average 20. And Terry says, points? He goes, no, shots. And, It's hard. It's That's hard right. to get up a lot of shots. So anyway, a long story back to McMahon. McMahon, what's going on with Spider Mitchell?
Well, you know, that was really interesting because he was hard on himself and he tends to be hard on himself. And he looks at the stat sheet and he's embarrassed. You know, he's like, that can't happen. 35 shots, no assists. I cannot do that. This can never happen again. And, you know, it's not that the Jazz are encouraging him to get up 35 shots, but the last thing they want him to do is to tone down his aggressiveness, is to go in, you know, playing hesitant. I mean, they need him to be, he's really their only creator. You know, the only guy that can get his own shot, unless you want to count Alec Burks, off the bench. And so, you know, Quinn Snyder emphasized, look, We don't want him worried about the quantity of his shots. We want him, you know, focused on making the right reads and we can live with the results. And, you know, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some mistakes, but the only way that he learns and grows is if he's attacking and if he's aggressive. And Joe Ingles was saying the same thing, Rudy Gobert. So, you know, he has the support, but you know, Donovan is a guy who holds himself to really high standards and has admitted this year, there are times when he gets a little too much in his own head. Now, he bounced back and had a really good performance the next night in Boston.
Right,
I think he had
right.
28. It was like 10 of 21, so, you know, pretty efficient, 6 assists. But then, and I'll admit, I didn't get to watch the Jazz-Indiana game, and it was a blowout, so I didn't want to go back and watch it, to be honest with you. So I don't know why, like, I don't know what happened there to make it so where he only, what did you say, it was 8 field goal attempts? But they're not going to win games with him taking 8 shots. That's just not going to happen.
You know what? They're not going to win with him taking 31 either, though, Tim, right? Do we agree
on that? Or 35. No, I hear you. Yeah. But the funny thing is they actually had a really good chance to win that, and he wasn't efficient that night. He was 13 of 31. And at one point, he started out like 1 of 9 and was 6 of 20 in the first half. But then at one point in the fourth quarter, he got it going. He got it going early in the fourth quarter. And I will say this, last year there were several times where it's like, man, he's struggling. And then next thing you know, he scores 20 points in the fourth quarter. You know, he goes on one of these flurries. He is capable of these insane scoring flurries, and he's capable of in-game amnesia, which I think is a critical.
Where's his real plus minus right now?
I have not.
Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah. I don't have.
You know, I'm going, while we're sitting here, I'm going through some of the real plus minuses that I think would surprise you, or maybe not. Maybe not. But, like, my other guy I love, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 362nd, by the way. Just saying.
Huh. I'm sorry, McMahon. I did want to derail you. Sorry, go ahead. You said he has amnesia.
Yeah, in-game amnesia. But, and so I thought, I'm sitting there watching that fourth quarter, and, you know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, he's going to have been rough all game long, and he's going to close it out, and they're going to win this game. And then he got cold, and I think missed his last 4 shots. I think in that game in particular, and, you know, I don't know that he would admit this, but I do think he got a little caught up in the Ben Simmons versus Donovan Mitchell hype. And he was getting booed every time he touched the ball. I made a joke about the Philly fans would, you know, boo everybody, including Santa. And my mentions went to hell that night on Twitter.
I did see that tweet, and I was watching the game actually, and I saw him get booed, and I was like, I picked it up midway through the game, and I was like, did he flagrant foul somebody in this game?
Yeah.
I know, but I didn't even make the connection.
It seems like a million years ago, you know?
Right. And it was an awesome atmosphere because you had, that was kind of an undercard. Allen Iverson's ringing the bell. You know, the pregame's crazy. It's Jimmy Butler's home debut, in Philly. Jimmy Butler was awesome in that game, and he had the back or the layup to seal it, but he was like 12 of 15 from the floor. 7 assists was just unbelievable. But I think Donovan got a little caught up in not, and maybe it wasn't even so much the Ben Simmons versus Donovan Mitchell as much as it was kind of Donovan Mitchell versus Philly. I mean, that crowd was on him the entire game. I remember when he started 1-9, then he got a couple of quick buckets, and Philly called a timeout, and he's barking back at the crowd. So he might have got a little caught up there, but he is, and really Donovan Mitchell is, you know, obviously kind of the headliner, but the Jazz as a whole, this is a team I certainly thought they were going to be one of the best teams in the Western Conference. You know, they finished last year with that 29-6 run. They bring back basically the entire team minus Jonas Jerebko, who had a tip in to beat them in the second game of the season. But, and they've, you know, they're a game under 500. They've gotten off this really uneven start. There's been no, you know, that continuity has not resulted in any kind of momentum to start the season. Rubio's struggling with his shot big time, and that was a very underrated part of their great finish last year. Rubio really shot the ball well. And the Jazz are just kind of in a weird spot, and certainly Donovan is the headliner on that team. He's not their most valuable player. It's still Rudy Gobert, but Donovan's the guy who has the most sizzle and, you know, gets the most attention. And he just hasn't, that great rookie season and great playoffs hadn't been a springboard. And, you know, in his defense, he did spend a lot of the summer with a protective boot on his foot to deal with that injury that he had ended his last playoff game.
I just want to clean this little bit up that Donovan Mitchell is currently 51st in RPM.
51st. I just
pretty
found
good.
It. Yeah,
yep.
One
pretty good.
1.74, very respectable. Eighth among shooting guards. Victor Oladipo, number one. Jimmy Butler, two. Danny Green, three. Josh Richardson, four. DeMar DeRozan, five.
Wow, look at that
five.
Danny Green.
Gary Harris, six. Yeah, Gary Harris, six. Josh Hart, seven. And Donovan Mitchell,
wow.
eight.
Wow,
with
Josh
Evan Fournier, Harrison. A distant ninth. Evan Fournier, you know, a distant ninth. And, you know, the game I saw, Danny Green got fouled out of that game on a very, very, very questionable call. And at the end of the game, Nick Nurse was just talking about how, without Danny Green, it's a killer for them. That's how important he's become to their team.
Well, the thing about Danny Green is, you know, his numbers, his defensive numbers suffered last year. And it was like, boy, is Danny Green kind of maybe going, is
the
he crossed,
right.
You know? And then he revealed that he was hurt. You know, he had mm-hmm. played through an injury.
Right.
And he even, and I don't have the story right in front of me, but he even kind of implied that it was either mistreated or underdiagnosed. I don't exactly
Man.
Know, but
so weird, right? So weird.
But now he's healthy.
His defensive numbers, Brian. And Brian, his defensive numbers, according to our Real Plus Minus, are better than his offensive numbers.
Right. And his and so and he had a game winner the other night. They ran. I don't know if they ran that. That was last night, I guess. I didn't see that game. I was traveling. I just saw the replay. I don't know if they ran that play for him. It kind of looked like they did. I can't believe that it was, but he ended up with this really good look on the baseline. But he's been huge for them. And when you talk to people around the Raptors, they will say that from a spiritual standpoint in the locker room, he's been invaluable. And, I mean, they're in love with – that was no throw-in. They are thrilled with Danny Green in addition, obviously, to Kawhi. But okay, you know, Donovan Mitchell, if he's struggling and he says he's embarrassed and he's 51, it's not that bad. But, McMahon,
right, but,
why do you think?
But they were hoping he'd be, you know, and certainly I think a lot of people anticipated he'd be a top 20 player in the league. And his field goal percentage is hovering in the low 40s. And I still think that the Jazz are going to be fine. I think they're going to end up being right in the thick of the West playoff pack. And I think there's going to be a time, I don't know when it's coming, but Donovan Mitchell, I do think is going to, things are going to click and he's going to get one of these extended grooves, but it hadn't happened yet.
Brian, can I ask you something?
Yes.
Although I shouldn't say that because
you just
Rachel,
did.
Yeah, Rachel just, she chastised me for asking if I can ask a question. Anyways, now that I've extended that, another guy that you were very high on, Jason Tatum, would you say he has mm-hmm. a higher or lower RPM than Donovan Mitchell right now?
Lower.
He's still pretty good. He's, I, you know, he's having an okay season. He just isn't performing at the same level that we expected him, but his efficiency is down.
Yeah, he's scoring. He's still scoring.
Probably higher. I'd say probably higher.
Okay. Jackie, do you know? Yeah.
I don't know.
She's looking at
and
so you
I would say lower. I'm trying to look. I can't look as fast as I want to. I'm going to say lower
so,
as I look.
Tatum is currently 105 in
yeah,
real plus minus.
Lower.
And to a different point, McMahon just described the Jazz as kind of a weird situation right now. Brian, I want to relitigate this point from a few weeks back. Isn't this a weird season right now?
No, it's not a weird season. It's an NBA season. There's ebbs and flows.
I feel like every NBA season is weird.
There's just more uncertainty right now. It's the people that you expected to take a step forward aren't doing that.
But that's the NBA. That's what happens. That's how it works.
That is the NBA.
It just hasn't been that.
Well, go back and look though. Like I tell people all the time, go back and look what the Celtics record was at Christmas last year. It's not much different than it is now.
Well, I know the Jazz record was bad.
Yeah, the Jazz are at one point
right.
were 9
so that's
games
sort
out
of
500
my,
in mid to late January.
Right.
I don't know, the Celtics, though.
Was it 9 games under 500? Wow.
Yeah, they were 9 games under 500 on January 24th and then went 29-6. The Celtics is just, I thought they were clearly the class of the Eastern Conference. And, you know, obviously Gordon Hayward is still trying to work his way back in anything resembling his pre-injury form. But I don't know, is that one of those things where they have too many pieces for the sum of the parts to be greater than the whole?
I just can't believe that.
Well, Jackie, what do you make of this Terry Rozier tweet? I'm asking Jackie about a tweet. I'm asking Jackie about a tweet. My mistake.
No, but usually, I see them, but I haven't. What did it say?
McMahon, did you see it?
It was vague enough where people thought like he was trying to get his way out of there or something, but he says that's not it.
Let's do us all a favor. All was in caps. We record this podcast on Wednesday morning. It's possible he is given an interview this morning while we're doing this, so we may be a little bit news lagged. He is not having a very good year, and obviously since Kyrie is back, he's not playing as much. His shots are down from where he was when he was starting. Do you think that's he didn't get a contract extension, which wasn't that big of a surprise to me, Jackie, in all honesty, because he's a backup for the Celtics now.
By the way, they tried. I mean, you know, they talked to him. It was like, it wasn't like they didn't even attempt it. But it's just, we all understand the parameters of here. When they re-signed Smart, that was bad news for him, you know? And that's just the way, that's just, you know. So anyway, I think, when I think about Terry Rozier, that's the one I can almost explain. Terry Rozier really flourished when he got a lot of minutes. It's really that simple. Some people, when they have limited minutes, their mindset changes, and I think Terry's one of them, and I think he's working on that, you know? I think that when he was handed the keys, because he had to be, he had some freedom to make mistakes, but to also make things happen. So that I understand. Jaylen Brown, it's confounding to me. Mm-hmm. Confounding to me what is happening there. I don't understand it. Jason Tatum, I think we can now all agree, maybe got a little ahead of himself, got some great endorsements. He's a fantastic player. I still think he's going to be a terrific, terrific player. But he's fallen in love with the long two, which is the worst thing that you can happen in the NBA. He holds the ball too long, a little too much ISO, and those are things they're talking to him about, and those are things that can be fixed. So I'm not worried about him. You know, Gordon Hayward, maybe it's going to take a whole year. As one all-star point guard said to me just a few nights ago, don't expect this dude to be all right this year. It takes a whole year. Everyone should just be patient with this poor guy. Maybe he knows something we all don't. So anyway, it's a little concerning, but it's still early.
Yes, I agree. I mean, but I will say this. Terry Rozier is a guy who is – I feel his anxiety about his payday. I feel it.
I can understand that too. He did, but Brian, Marcus Smart thought he was going to get more. He didn't. Because we all knew it. You and I, all three of us all talked about it, that he wouldn't get more.
Right.
And I feel the same way about Terry Rozier. GMs and coaches, he is struggling a little bit this year, but I think they can compartmentalize why he's struggling, understand why he is, and I don't think it slays your free agency status. I just don't believe that, because I think the GMs and the coaches in this league are too smart for that.
We'll see. I just, it's, you know, just put it on the board and keep an eye on it. So I'm at this Cavs-Lakers game. You guys, let me just ask you just a little quick poll here. Do you guys care about this at all? Do you care about LeBron going back to Cleveland again?
Not one iota.
I have some curiosity.
Kevin Love is out. J.R. Smith is gone, but it's not the same team.
No, I mean, it's a terrible team. I have some curiosity, more kind of how he will be welcomed back or received and if he's going to go out there with the mentality that he wants to drop 60 on him.
He is red hot right now, and he's had 2 days off, and I kind of think it's going to be a lower stress. I don't want to say low stress, but a lower stress game. Like, I don't think, I mean, I guess anything's possible. It's the NBA. It's the end of a road trip. It's before a holiday. The could lay an egg, but I think it's an opportunity to pound an opponent into submission. It wouldn't blow me away if LeBron has a huge game tonight. And not because he's trying to send some message, just because the situation is set up that way. But my point is, I'm not feeling a heck of a lot of interest either.
Well, I'm all in tonight on Mavs Net, so, you know, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask.
I don't know. I think if it was, like, look, I was interested when LeBron left Cleveland and went to Miami. That interests me. I was interested when LeBron left Miami and went back to Cleveland and played. That all interested me. This, to me, just feels completely different.
He's not going to get booed, though, is he?
This is the way LeBron rolls. He might.
Why?
It's hard to know.
It just feels to me, Brian, know, like everyone
I think
in Cleveland.
I think they
I
have
about,
a video they're going to do. You know, the difference is that in 2010, and not like, I don't want to make it sound like everybody was coming in there being indifferent. Obviously, fans planned for weeks about how to, you know, send a message to LeBron, but the organization incited the crowd a little bit with some of the things they did from a game operation standpoint. Like, they had some well-known Cleveland athletes and celebrities, and they showed them in the crowd, and then they would cut back to LeBron, warming up on the Jumbotron. So, like, they would go to Bernie Kosar, then back to LeBron. Then they would go to Josh Cribbs, who was like the best Browns player, back to LeBron. Then they went to Drew Carey, you know, a symbol of, you know, Cleveland. And Dan Gilbert made an entrance, and, like, you know, like, he was almost like a fighter coming to the ring. Like, they showed him walking to his seat, you know, set against LeBron. So, like, part of the reason that atmosphere was crazy was because the team was stoking the fire. So there'll be none of that. In my expectation, I don't know for 100%, but there will probably be none of that tonight. And, you know, obviously he's won a championship and things have moved on, but, like, the ticket resale market is not hot. It's, you know, I'm not sensing a lot of interest even within ESPN. About the game. I mean, there's, you know, I'm not on SportsCenter all day long. I mean, Rachel Nichols is here doing stuff, so there's some stuff. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be a huge emotional moment. It would be kind of cool if they gave him, like, a 2 or 3 minute standing ovation. Because when he left, he checked out of the game during the finals. People thought it was possible, but they were in the process of getting swept 4-0. People had left. It was not the right atmosphere to tip your cap. And so this is an opportunity to do that. I don't know how many more opportunities are going to be like this. Like, you know, someday they'll retire his jersey, but that'll be after his career. So it won't quite be the same. So I don't know. I think I said, like, McMahon, I am curious, but I'm not expecting there to be, like, Dave McMenamin and I published basically an oral history today of you know, what happened in that game 2010. I'm not expecting there to be oral histories done about tonight's game, but who knows?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like it to me. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, dissing our network, I guess, but I just don't – I don't think the drama of him coming back to Cleveland holds enough water for the people at large. We all knew he was going. We knew it all year long that he was leaving. And since he's left, Kevin Love's been injured. J.R. Smith's away from the team. They, you know, they're a shadow of themselves. So, no, doesn't work for me. Sorry.
Well, it's been a. I sound like Bontemps there, but I put up a tweet yesterday about the 2016 championship continues to just be amazing and be a miracle, which I don't say to mock the Cavs. I say because it genuinely was a miracle. And the just the things that have happened since then. So we're talking about, you know, 2.25 years, something like, you know, 27 months or something like that, 28 months. We've seen Kyrie Irving demand a trade, David Griffin leave the organization, half the team get traded, LeBron leave the organization, Ty Lue get fired, an assistant coach sue the team, the interim coach to replace him basically, you know, have a showdown about getting paid with the organization. J.R. Smith now in exile. It's been quite the ride since then. And you know, Jackie, the Mavericks broke up after 2011, mm-hmm. kind of the lockout. But that was kind of a conscious decision by the team, right? To not
that was
bring
a,
those
that
guys
was a,
back.
That was a Cuban decision based on his interpretation of the new CBA and He thought that, boy, he was going to be able to go get Chris Paul and Dwight Howard, blah, blah, blah. And obviously none of it worked out.
So that was a bad decision. It wasn't because of attrition and, you know, people wanting the hell out of there and everything like that. I don't know. Maybe.
No, the players were not thrilled. Tyson Chandler wanted to stay. They only offered him a 1-year deal. I mean, Jet Terry was mad the whole year because he saw the writing on the wall. You know, it was, Bure never wanted to go to Minnesota. I mean, on and on. That was a total Cuban decision and nothing that, you know, I mean, the players were not happy that they had to move on, and Dirk ultimately went along with it. And then, you know, years later it was like, yep, we screwed that one up.
You know, Jackie, I've encouraged Cleveland fans to try to embrace the 2016 title the way Portland embraced the 1977 title, where it basically adopted a movement. You know, they had a magical – I wasn't even alive, but I'm aware of it because it's had such an oral history about it, which is the magical run they had through the playoffs. They were like the 3 or 4 seed in the West, maybe. They pulled a couple of upsets, I know. And I've encouraged Cleveland to like sort of let that be branded as like this great moment. Maybe it's too soon. Maybe it's too soon to have perspective.
And they did have this, you know. They did have this dude called Bill Walton. Kind of like LeBron, you know, Jack Ramsey. I mean, there's reasons for why it went the way it did. No, I'm not discounting LeBron's great legacy in Cleveland. Please don't misunderstand me by any stretch. I just don't, you know, if there was some drama about him leaving, which there wasn't, if there was some drama about how it affected the team going forward, there wasn't. And, you know, Kyrie was long gone by that point. It just doesn't hold my attention.
Yeah, you know, LeBron gave some quotes. So this week there was a story in The Athletic where LeBron gave some quotes about the Kyrie trade day.
Right.
Joe Varden had the story. It was a good interview. You know, getting LeBron to open up about stuff like that is hard.
So Joe does
it was a good interview.
Real good job.
It's time to let that go. You know, and I respected Kyrie.
Yeah.
Right. Kyrie, said, you know, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And bravo. And, you know, LeBron was, I think, trying to explain, because he knew why Joe was there. Joe covers the Cavs. He flew into L.A. to do the story. I think LeBron was trying to explain where it went sideways in Cleveland. And certainly the Kyrie trade hurt. But when LeBron signed with the Lakers this year, it was about a lot more than the Kyrie trade.
That's disingenuous to me for LeBron to suggest that, well, Kyrie left, and so then it all fell apart after that. We're part of the reason Kyrie left, and you know it. And that's just a fact. And that part wasn't in the story. So to me, that's a disingenuous premise.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. All right. I hope everyone enjoys their Thanksgiving. McMahon, I'm not a big turkey fan. Jackie, I feel like you, are you a turkey fan? I don't feel like you're a, I feel like you would have something else on the table.
No, I'm turkey.
Are you straight tradition?
All the way.
You're straight tradition?
Oh, completely. Right.
I enjoy some good turkey, but I feel like stuffing is the underrated star of the Thanksgiving meal.
Oh, McMahon, we're best friends now.
No, we're not.
So let me just pull a little curtain here on Andrew Hahn.
I don't even
Hahn.
Eat this studying.
Andrew Hahn is a huge fan of side dishes. I have been to restaurants with Andrew where he will order for his meal 2 side dishes.
Did it the other day with me. He has ordered some great mac and cheese. Ooh, yes.
So Andrew Hahn is predisposed to like stuffing, but I appreciate it.
What veggies?
All right, thank you guys.
Veggies, quick before we go, just quick veggies. What Thanksgiving veggies are on your
table? Put some celery in the stuffing.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That doesn't count. Vegetables. Yeah. I'm talking about vegetables next to the stuffing. Good God, Brian.
And honey carrots.
Thank you.
Wait,
Brian, you do understand celery is nothing. It's just water and like, that's not a vegetable. No.
Yeah, no. Okay. I do have a question. Are potatoes vegetables? I don't think they are.
Well,
No, technically, they're a root vegetable.
All right. Well, right. Mashed potatoes and stuffing are the two top highlights of a Thanksgiving meal.
So you guys have vegetables on your table.
Yeah, cranberry sauce is disgusting.
I like squash. I love some squash. I love some squash. I love peas. I love peas on Thanksgiving. Yes, I do.
You know, peas are becoming more popular. People are now mashing them and putting them on things.
Peas are very popular in the Boyle home. Very popular.
Which is old school in England. Mushy peas are very popular. All right, we're off course. But thank you for listening. Enjoy everyone's holiday. Thanks to Josh back in Bristol for spinning the dials, and to Andrew, and everybody have a good holiday time.